Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. My guest today is filmmaker Duncan Riddle, whose new picture, Older Children, will screen three times at the Gene Siskel Film Center starting Saturday, November 10th. The film explores the lives of 20-somethings from a wealthy Windy City suburb who are attempting to navigate that awkward stage between college and self-sufficient adulthood. It's a terrific film. So happy to have Duncan here. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about your background, because I've been seeing that you have a whole long history at a Red Orchid Theater in Chicago, which is just a wonderful, lovely, intimate theater venue.
Yes, it is. It really feels kind of like my home now. I moved to Chicago about 5 years ago to act and very quickly got a job there. I was acting in a show, didn't have any lines, and I've kind of been there in various capacities ever since. And I'm now an artistic associate there. And I've worked as an actor, as an assistant director, as a dramaturg, kind of all over the map there.
Yeah.
That's kind of, yeah.
And I know even from my, high school acting experience, that was about as far as I took the acting thing. But it's like, even when you don't have any lines, that's almost like a great, way to just sort of like practice the craft too, because you still have to be completely into it. You can't just
be standing there.
You're going through the whole, like I had one line in Man of La Mancha in high school, and it was like, I'm still going through the whole emotional arc of watching the characters go through their arc. So it's really kind of fun way to do it. So.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you have to be on completely.
Yeah.
The whole time, yeah.
And so has theater acting been like a first passion, or was film always in the back of your head something you wanted to try out?
You know, honestly, it's always been the other way around. It's always been film. I've always wanted to act in film and make films. And theater, of course, is a much more, I don't know, it seems like the higher calling. But truthfully, and I'm a bit embarrassed about this, I don't have the patience for it. I mean, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks into a run, I just get a little antsy. And there's something about the medium of film where, you know, you only have two shots or depending on the director, maybe 16 shots, but you've only got a set number of tries, and I find that really exciting and challenging in a different way. I mean, it's incredibly challenging to go out there sometimes, eight times a week being on stage, but it's not the same. I don't have quite the same interest in it.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And as far as film goes, I mean, were you doing films like on your own as a kid, or just kind of starting out there? Like, was that always something you were working towards? Because this is really your first feature. Older Children
That's right.
is the first feature. Yeah,
I've been writing screenplays maybe since I was around 10 or 11, and I started making films maybe when I was in college, just short films, with. I studied in Berlin for a year, and the dean of the school had a camera, and I borrowed it for the year and made three highly experimental short films that should never see the light of day. And so that's kind of how it started. And then I came to Chicago, and actually we shot a version of one of the scenes in Older Children as a short a year before the filming, and that kind of started the process of making Older Children.
Yeah, and there's a number of younger filmmakers, people in their 20s, 30s, who are making films that are very personal and very much about their generation, but not saying this isn't like the voice of my generation. I know Lena Dunham always says in the show Girls, where she says I'm the voice of my generation, right, or something, and it's obviously an ironic way of saying it because there's no voice that can encompass an entire generation. But I feel like the films and the shows that are the most relatable are the ones that are the most specific to the artist who's creating it. That's really, highlighting something about their own experience.
Yeah. Well, I just want to go on the record and say I'm not the voice of my generation. I don't quite know how to respond to that, I guess. I think that part of the thing that I was interested in is that I don't feel like these characters have a voice, and they're constantly struggling to kind of find something that defines them, in the same way that Lena Dunham in Girls is doing. Actually, it's interesting that the Roger Ebert's review just came out this morning, and he said, they don't have it. It would feel strained to impose a plot on these characters because they don't have a plot. They don't have lives that we're invested in. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the movie kind of unfolded as a series of snapshots rather than like a linear storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a roundabout way of answering your.
Well, sure. Yeah, but that's what I love about it. It feels like, even if this isn't personal to your experience, it's very specific to these people. And it doesn't try to apologize for the fact that they have, like, a limited worldview, which I think is important, because you're seeing they're all from the same suburb, this wealthy suburb. And they even talk about this. It's like they're sort of starting to acknowledge, you know, their own limitations and their, you know, life experience, that it's like, I grew up in a very safe environment, you know, and they're starting to really kind of awaken to this. And I think that's what makes, you know, all the characters kind of function as one, like they're all kind of on the same journey in a way.
That's right. Yeah. And it was kind of a struggle. One of the challenges was kind of figuring out the balance between, you know, maybe looking down at them, condescending to them a little bit, but also really observing them and realizing, yeah, okay, these are first world problems, and mm-hmm. you know, they're all very well off, and
yeah.
But also just looking at them and be like, no, this is what it means to be in your 20s nowadays, and you know, at least for these people, and kind of trying to observe that very honestly.
Oh yeah, and I know there's always the tendency too, where if you're taking that sort of approach and perspective, that there's the tendency where people are like, well, you're just condescending. I never felt this film was condescending. I never felt like it was above them, because I feel like there are several moments in the film where you will find, you know, things that are just almost like cringe inducing, and just how relatable they are. I mean, these are very universal themes that you're working with, so I think that's really a strength of the whole piece.
Oh good.
But just in terms of your influences, I'm wondering, I mentioned this to you earlier before we did this, that Woody Allen's Hannah and Her Sisters, I mean, that's one of my favorites of his. And I was just wondering, to the extent that this served as an influence to you, just in terms of, there's these wonderful chapter breaks. It's kind of an episodic, you know, story where it's all these different vignettes and all these wonderfully quirky titles. I mean, they're just kind of all off the wall, all different sorts of details that relate to the story. And then even just the way the camera kind of stands there and just like allows people to enter and exit hallways and not necessarily following them in. There were certain things that kind of jumped out to me there.
Yeah. I want to start that with a story with the executive producer on this, Craig Wright, who's an LA TV writer and playwright. Was an executive producer on this film, and I sent him a very, very early cut, and he wrote back and he said, you can have the Woody Allen music or you can have the Woody Allen chapter cards, but you can't have both. and so, you know, I kind of listened to him and got an incredible composer to do an original score, which I'm really, really happy with, and I kept the title cards. And the music is still Woody Allen-esque. But,
well, it still functions in a similar way, too, where it's like the classical, nostalgic, you know, music and everything.
That's
but
right.
Why was that in it? Why was that something that you wanted to sort of evoke or kind of work with that similar spirit?
I mean, I love Woody Allen, and it's just a sensibility I really relate to. And especially for this story, because it's kind of a series of snapshots, the chapter cards just kind of came naturally. It just mm-hmm. seemed like the right way to tell the story. And all these characters are very well read, they're very articulate, and it seemed right to use that kind of language, that kind of motif for this story. It felt like the way to go. And in terms of the music, I don't think I have a good answer. I mean, I just love that music, and it just felt like music I would want to hear 400 times while I was watching dailies and in the editing bay and all that stuff. Yeah, and in terms of Hannah and Her Sisters, I mean, you couldn't have nailed it more. I mean, that's a film I watched a lot, and actually it was how I started writing this, was I was watching Hannah and Her Sisters, and that first scene, the holiday party with uh-huh. Michael Caine's character and that voiceover and the first chapter card is God, She's Beautiful, and then it goes right in, and it's Michael Caine, God, She's Beautiful, and it's such an incredible scene. I mean, you know, the amount he establishes in 1 minute. I mean, after 1 minute, you know everything you need to know about so many characters, about where we're going in the story. I mean, it's just every screenwriting class should.
Yes,
you know,
and it works like cinema. I mean, it's all visual. You're getting visual information from the faces of the actors, from the way the camera, you know, lenses them. I mean, it's just so, it's cinematic in a way where it just gets rid of all the BS exposition that just too many filmmakers linger on.
Well,
and
that's the brilliance is that, I mean, all of it is exposition, yet none of it feels expository. I mean, it really mm-hmm. doesn't. It mm-hmm. just feels completely natural in the world we're living in.
Well, and I think some of the funniest moments in your film is when the characters are kind of arguing over like the way to say things, like sort of like the heightened vocabulary. Like the one lady, I can't remember the character's name, but she's so funny. She reminded me of almost like a young Judy Davis is the actress who plays this woman who is dumping her boyfriend. Like they're kind of at a crossroads.
And, yes,
and just
Powell.
The way she is that her name? Okay,
yeah,
she's terrific. And just the way she says portly. Like I mean, yeah. I've noticed that I actually write portly sometimes, but I've never actually said it out loud. And it just sounds like such a silly word. Once you say it out loud, but it's like you can tell this woman's very well-read, but just has kind of a trouble embracing, you know, human relationships. So.
Yes, yes, that's an understatement. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. And also just in terms of, you know, the characters in Hannah and Her Sisters and a lot of Woody Allen films are in this kind of like Manhattan bubble too. And I feel like that's why this film utilizes the Woody Allen, because I feel like Woody Allen's one of the most influential filmmakers for our generation, many generations, mm-hmm. is that it fits so well within the Woody Allen style because you're in a group of people that are from a similar sort of bubble or a similar sort of, you know, group. So really the whole Allen style lends itself better to this film than many of the other indies that try to evoke it because it sort of fits within his like a societal view, I think.
Well, that's good to hear.
I don't know, but like, was that a subconscious thing on your part, or were you thinking like in just in terms of the type of characters that he observes?
Yeah, I mean, I think on some level it was an unconscious thing, and I guess if I was being a little big for my britches, I would say that, you know, I wanted to do what he was doing in New York and Chicago, and you know, I felt like, you know, kids from an affluent suburb would make the transition pretty smoothly, and you know, I don't know. I think he's concerned. Like Manhattan is a good example. Like that's one of the best films about selfishness. Just selfish people. And so all these characters are really selfish. I mean, a lot of them, and they don't really know it, but they're so self-absorbed. And they're also in their 20s, and everyone's a bit selfish in their 20s. But I think that might help is as a connector, is that all these people are really just focused on themselves, and they're so neurotic, and they can't quite get over themselves. And so they have an unbelievable hard time communicating. A lot of scenes in Woody Allen movie, there's two people just talking at each other. They're not talking with each other.
Yes.
And that's kind of something that I, you know, there are long scenes here, like 8-minute scenes where you have two people in bed together. They're not talking to each other. They're talking past each other.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that's part of the bridge.
Well, and one of the universally relatable themes, I think, too, are people. And there's a line in the film that relates to many of the different stories, and it's that it's harder to get over people who are wrong for you.
Mm,
and there's a similar thing. I think isn't that your character? You have sort of a relationship with a woman who...
I definitely agree with that statement, but it's Jill, who's played by Caroline Neff, who says that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And she's just gone through this kind of torturous
with
reunion.
Walter, with this man named Walter, who's from LA, who's coming back, who's the big name. I love that his chapter is his name, because he is like the name, you know, Hollywood actor. Oh, it's Walter. Walter mm-hmm. Stone. And and that actress who plays Jill is really terrific.
Oh, she's
too.
Fantastic.
Yeah, because there's a whole scene where just the distance between them is expressed just by the fact that they're in different rooms maintaining a conversation. I thought that was well done.
Yeah, that was really wonderful. That was one of the first scenes we shot, and we kind of mapped it out, and we knew exactly kind of it went more or less according to plan, and it kind of gave the whole production momentum. Because
mm-hmm.
That was a scene that was really important for everyone. And I think that more than any scene, I spent the most time writing that one.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really important that we got that right. And it's hard doing a scene with, you know, it's that long scene and they're both in two different locations. And, God, it was a nightmare editing sound-wise. But, you know, that was, you know, that, yeah.
Yeah, and that just seemed like a really key step in, you know, growing up, is just, you know, trying to let go of the relationships that are stunting your growth in one way or the other. And I felt like that was something that was linking several of the stories.
Yeah, all of them are kind of, I think, linked by that. And in a way that they don't know why they're still seeking these relationships, whether it's, you know, my character comes back because he's still, I guess, ostensibly in love with his college sweetheart, but they don't seem like they're having a particularly good time. I mean, there's not a great connection, but...
And she consoles you into saying, though, oh, well, you're the only person I'm cheating on my current boyfriend with.
And that validates me for some reason.
I know, yeah. And why was it that character that you decided that was the person you wanted to play? And was that a role you always had sort of thought that's something I'll probably end up doing in the film?
That's a good question. I played that part a year before in the short, which was called Artistic Temperament. And so I always knew that was something that I could kind of fall back into, because that's his one big scene. However, when I was meeting with the casting director, we had a great casting director on this, Ashley Neal. And when she was bringing in everyone for the roles, she asked me, she's like, do you want to read for Henry? Or, I mean, do you want to have actors read for Henry? And I was like, oh, and she was like, you know what? I think you're probably going to play it. But if you see someone that's right for the role, then we'll call them in, as opposed to having people read it and then you take it, which would look awful.
Sure.
And I was like, that's great. That was a great idea. And we saw two actors who were perfect for Henry. And I was like, oh, they'll be great. But I ended up casting them in different roles.
Sure.
And it's, you know, when you're working on something so low budget, it's just like, it's one less schedule to work around. And that was important. This is not answering your question. Yes.
Sure. No, totally. No, that's the whole point of questions, is to lead to better answers. But I think one of the reasons why I think a lot of people should check out this film when it premieres in Chicago is this film introduces moviegoers to so many great actors, all fresh faces to me, all new faces to me. And I'm wondering what was kind of the talent pool you were pulling from, and were any of these people in the theater community that you were working in?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that question. I mean, part of the reason I wrote the thing is just because I've been in the theater community here for about 5 years now, and I go see plays, and I'm at auditions, and I just see all these incredible actors, and it was just like, we got to do something. And that became more and more urgent as the years went by, and I just wanted to make a film with all these guys. And I wrote specific parts for specific people, but a lot of them I'd never met, and you know, it was just, I knew all these people were out there and I'd seen them in certain shows, but I hadn't met them, and it was a great way to kind of just get introduced to all this talent. So yeah, I mean, most of them are theater actors, I would say. I wouldn't say I'm particularly a theater actor. The character of Eddie, played by Chris Renton is not, he was a friend of mine. I wrote that part just for him because I knew he'd be great. Other than us two, I think they're all theater actors. And for a lot of them, it was their first time on film. And that was very exciting. So everyone was it was just a big learning experience. You know, I mean, my first time making a film with a big crew, and it was the first time they were on camera for a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think one of the cliched questions to ask someone with a theater background who's making their first film is, was it a challenge to kind of dial down, especially the actors in front of the camera, dial down the acting? And I feel like in this case, it was probably excellent that you had the background at a place like Red Orchid Theater, because that is such a wonderfully intimate venue. I mean, when I was there, I was like in a chair that was like on the stage.
Right.
I mean, you're like right up there. So I thought that was probably a great kind of foundation for you as far as, you know, working in, you know.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, I wasn't casting actors from the Goodman or Steppenwolf Theater, like these big theaters. These are people coming from storefronts, and they are used to an intimate space. And, you know, the great thing about casting these guys, I didn't really have to give any direction. I mean, there was really nothing. Like, occasionally I'd say smaller, less big, you know, and that was it. So the size of theater that they're coming from, they're all professionals, and they kind of, as soon as they're on camera, they know to bring it down.
Yeah, so, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, just as yourself, you know, as someone who, I mean, I feel like, we'll go back to Woody Allen in just a second. I mean, I feel like he so loves his characters that he can get away with kind of kidding them. And I felt like in this case that you really have a lot of feeling for your characters. And I feel like that's also key to a film that, you know, trying to avoid the sort of the condescension label and all that. And anyone who, you know, people that always say, oh, you know, Lena Dunham, she's coming from a place of privilege, so I can't relate to that and all that. But I feel like, you know, just as she is so aware of that privilege and makes that a part of the character and her own, like, stunted growth on a lot of the things, I think that's similar here, is that these characters are very aware of where they're, or they're gaining an awareness as the film goes on, which is what makes it so good.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's obviously I should not use the word tragedy, but I'm blanking on it. I think that's their downfall, is that they're so hyper aware of their of their situation, of their problems, and they can articulate it away.
Yes.
And you know,
in the therapy sessions and all these.
Exactly.
Know,
but yeah. It doesn't help. I mean, it doesn't make it any better.
Yes.
And that's definitely something I think, you know, Lena Dunham and girls, I mean, they're all hyper articulate. There's nothing they can't explain away, but that doesn't get them anywhere. And that's very frustrating.
Absolutely. And what did it help to edit this film? Because I think you edited with someone, Josh Romero, on this film.
I did. Oh, he was kind of a gift from God. And actually, it was really funny. He, off of what you were saying, there were points where I was cutting based on kind of that condescending rule. Like there were parts where I was like, oh, that's kind of mean. And I feel like it's the writer in the room kind of talking down, so let's get rid of it and get rid of it. And so we just kind of spliced out all of the judgment, you know, bits and lines. But yeah, it was, you know, I took a pass at it, and then I kind of handed it over to him and I said, you know, go nuts. Mm-hmm. And then he did it, and then we kind of came together and kind of combined our versions. Because, you know, the thing about editing this, he was in Des Moines, I was in Chicago, and we very rarely met. So it was all done kind of over computers. And that was a challenging way to edit.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's such a terrific film. And just myself, you know, someone being in, you know, I'm someone in you know, his mid-20s, I found it a very relatable film, even though I'm not from a particularly wealthy suburb. Mm-hmm. I feel like the problems are going through the same. A lot of people are going through, especially in the economic, you know, situation in the country. I think it's something a lot of people will relate to, I think.
Oh, good. I hope so.
Definitely. Yeah. And so you and your producer, Eric Jackson, or
Eric Jackson.
Will be at all three screenings at the Siskel. And you also have a playwright coming Saturday. Tell me
That's very exciting. Brett Nevue, who's an ensemble member at Red Orchid Theater, is a playwright, and he will be there for the Saturday screening. He'll do a Q&A. And he has an unbelievably good play right now at Red Orchid Theater called The Opponent, which it's just a complete knockout, and it's selling out, so please go buy tickets now because they won't be available very much longer.
Awesome.
But he's terrific, and I'm actually in pre-production to make a film with him that will start in February. We're slated to shoot in February.
And he's just supporting your film? He's just kind of there because he's part of kind of the theater community, and he's just sort of...
Yes, and we've also since kind of formed a small production company, Eric, Brett, and I, called Wild Mouse Films, and this is the first under that label, and the one in February. It's called Christmas Bites, will also be under that label. So we've kind of joined forces.
Awesome. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being here, Duncan. It's a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
No, absolutely. And I really urge everyone to check out Older Children when it premieres at the Gene Siskel Film Center. For tickets and showtimes, visit siskelfilmcenter.org. For all my recent reviews and interviews, you can check out hollywoodchicago.com and indie-outlook.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.